Which Gamecocks need to take it from good to great in 2026? Let's talk about it on Coffee. Good morning, Gamecock fans. This is JC Sherbert. Today is Thursday, February 26th, the year of our Lord, and welcome in to Coffee. Good to be with you today. I know if you probably watched the baseball game last night, you're probably not feeling too well if you care about that program, and many of you do. If you didn't see it, the Gamecocks lost to Queens last night, 9-8. Now, just let me tell you about Queens. They were 9-44 a year ago. They were 3-4, ranked 273 in the country in college baseball, I believe, in the RPI or whatever power rankings there are out there, the KenPom of college baseball. And they came in and took it to the Gamecocks like, they were the aggressor. 7-1. They built a lead. Carolina tried to come back again, couldn't get it done. That's a theme over and over again. Jamie Bradford wrote in the newsletter yesterday, and I'm going to put that link up right in the description on YouTube here if you're watching or catching this on YouTube. So you can go read that. If you're not subscribed to our newsletter, and you can, there's a button you can subscribe, but you can go read it even if you're not subscribed, where he just kind of breaks down the numbers. And the last 2 years under Kingston, South Carolina actually ranked third and fifth in runs scored in the SEC. Those numbers have dipped to 16-16 under Paul Menieri. And the common thread is that they don't walk and they don't get hit by pitch. So when you have a coach that I thought he was saying it facetiously says, "I don't like walks." And they're up there just swinging away and hitting the ball right at people and long fly balls for outs. I think that's a little more than luck. I think that's, and I think back to the Army game. I'm not a baseball expert, but Tyler Bock, poor guy. I mean, he's supposed to be the leadoff guy, and he's got a good swing. He's just up there swinging away and down the nine hole after being clutch early. But he's just way too aggressive, I think, probably trying to get out of the nine hole. And that's another issue I'll let Bradford talk about, where you're not just making lineup changes, you're making dramatic lineup changes, which is not, I mean, that's not good for any college player to get in to have that. Baseball players care about that. If you talk to anybody, they care about where they bat. And if you constantly have them pressing and stuff on top of everything else, it's not good. If they're worried, if they don't swing, they're going to get benched or moved down the lineup, then that's not good. They're not going to, and it's a team game. You got to get people on base. We've all seen Moneyball. All right. What's he do? He gets on base, right? It's kind of the key to baseball. And the other thing about it is what concerns you is that you have a coach that's a veteran, that's been around 40 years or whatever, as he said last night. And what are his chances of changing? And what was pointed out, Bradford's pointed this out to me, is with TrackMan and all this technology you have, the strike zone is tighter than it used to be. And so you have the ability, and then there's more power arms that you face, more good arms, more good pitching in college baseball. You can't just go out there, and most teams don't go out there and just outscore people. And you look at the Gamecocks, what's kind of their bugaboo? Not necessarily last night, because Queens actually hit the ball, but against Army, the walks, they take advantage. Other teams that are mid-major teams are taking advantage of this when the Gamecocks. So the Gamecocks pitchers have to almost be perfect, right? Because the batters just getting there swinging away. And I know it was 9-8. You're probably like, JC, why are you going hard in the paint here on the hitting? Well, because you're down 7-1, and when you got into their bullpen, that should be, you should be up. You should have gotten to their starter. The starter came into the game with a 10 ERA. They hadn't played anybody that has the expectations and talent and ability of South Carolina. I mean, you should be able to hit that guy. I mean, they couldn't hit the Air Force guy, hit the Navy guy some, couldn't hit the Army guy. I mean, it's Northern Kentucky. Heck, Gardner Webb was really the only one they walked off, and they didn't get off to a good start there either. So, and we've watched this for 2 years, And you look at the numbers and the walks and hit by pitches are at on base percentage way down. Way down. And I've been watching Carolina baseball for a long time, and many of you have as well. And Tanner, Holbrook, Kingston, it doesn't matter when the Gamecocks were on. How many times in a big inning did it start with somebody getting plunked with a pitch or a couple of leadoff walks? And, and then the pitcher starts to get wild. I mean, against Army, they had a bases loaded. I think they were down, what, four or five, four maybe. Bases loaded. I think Bach was at the plate or Scobie won. Bach was at the plate. And, the pitcher had walked two straight runs in. Yeah, that's right. It was 7-3, I believe, in the game. Gosh, my short-term memory is not as good as my long-term memory, right? And he just, and I think Bach was up. Yeah, and he just swings away, and it's like the guy was, just freaked out, and a lot of the pressure's on the pitcher. Just, what are you doing? And I just, that has to change, folks. And it has to change before tomorrow night. Chances are low of that happening. But this is just not, given the strike zone, given all that stuff, it's just not going to work in modern football. It's very similar to, I don't want to use this year's football team, but it's very similar to Michigan State under Mark D'Antonio. He kind of refused to fix their offense and get away from the ball control stuff, and he ended up re retiring. They had a great run, but coaches that want to win, that are, but I don't want to say older coaches, but have kind of a lot of experience and done it a certain way, the game ultimately catches up with you and changes. And so if it if you you can either adapt, right? And there's been some coaches, veteran coaches here that have adapted. Steve Spurrier adapted. Lou Holtz, it was kind of a tug of war at times to adapt. But, 99, he kind of ran the offense and then said, well, because that was his thing at Notre Dame, was calling plays. It's about kind of a veer run-based system. And he turned it over to Skip and you saw what happened. I mean, so you either adapt and adapt. Good, great. I've never seen a good coach. Last that wasn't willing to adapt to what his players can do best. South Carolina has good hitters. A lot, I think it's talking to, again, I'll defer to the baseball experts, a better lineup than it was last year, 1 through 9. Almost every one of these guys in the lineup has potential. It gives you hope. I don't know that you could say that last year, some of the lighter hitting guys at the bottom of the order or whatever. But you kind of look at it and it's like, well, and look, people can say, well, this guy came from Western Kentucky. This is the SEC. This guy came from here, the Big Ten. This is the SEC. They haven't been playing the SEC, folks. They've been playing Northern Kentucky and Gardner-Webb and Wofford and, Air Force and Army and Navy. I mean, so these guys obviously are capable. And that's the shame of it. I know the pitching was down last night. Inevitably, though, and again, watching college baseball a lot, how many times have you seen a midweek game where, well, the pitching's just not there tonight because you're running out of guy that's not a weekend starter or that, maybe had to do some relief duty? That wasn't the case with the Chicole Connor last night. Connor Chicoli, Connor Chicoli last night, and he had a good start against Wofford, but I don't think it was. Maybe he did come in. But he just didn't, just didn't have it. Got hit around or whatever. They had to get into the bullpen. Parker Molot was not good. That happens in a midweek game. And, how many times have you also seen Carolina say, okay, well, we'll just have to score 15 runs tonight and do it? And this team's not capable with the approach they're doing. They're making pitchers that struggle look very, very good. And that's highly concerning. Last year, the narrative coming out of the program from Paul Menard and others was, well, I just didn't have the players and all that. South Carolina reinvests in the program with NIL. They sign on paper a really good portal class. The worry coming into the season was the pitching, not necessarily that they could hit the ball, and they can't hit the ball again. So what's the common thread? Because they were third and fifth in offense the 2 years previous and went to a super regional and regional under a guy they fired. What's the common thread? And the hitting coach is the same. The same guy that had those high level offenses. So what's the common thread here? There's two. There's Terry Rooney and Paul Maneri. Terry Rooney's a pitching coach, recruiting coach, but assistant head coach. I guess he has. My understanding is that I don't know what Terry Rooney does with the lineup, but my understanding is the lineup's Paul Maneri's. It's his baby. And you want your head coach to do that. I mean, he's the head coach for a reason, he's paid for a reason, but whatever his ideas are about what they need to do, it's not working. And it needs to change. I don't know how it needs to change, but it's got to be one of two ways. And I think that the leadership at South Carolina owes. They have a duty at this point to the fans after the year that they've had to give this team a chance if there is not a willingness to change. I don't think firing a guy after 9 games in a baseball season is, or 12 if they get swept this weekend, is prudent or what you should do. But I feel like at this point, with the way things have been in men's sports at this school for the entire year, that would go a long way. That would go a long way. And it's not fair to any of y'all that like baseball. Some of you don't, and that's fine. I do. I love Carolina baseball. And I think that, hey, everybody sat through the 4-8 football season that was massively soul-crushingly disappointing. Again, that was an offensive approach primarily. But Beamer got through it, got some players, went a 180 with his offensive philosophy, and really did it in the season after he got rid of Shula with Furry. I know it's a results-oriented business, but that offense, had they put that, what Furry did on the field the whole year, they'd probably been in a bowl, just to be honest. But and then basketball has like the opposite set of problems. I think that it's more, they just didn't put together a good roster, that allows them to compete. There's a lot of, they still don't have like that true point guard. Michi's playing his butt off, Scharf jams, all that. The team's doing better things, but they're just not good enough. I mean, and when you're deficient inside and outside and you have to hit threes and you can't hit threes, you're not going to win. A bottom line, full stop. But that's a repeat of last year. So now baseball looks like a repeat of last year, even worse. Last year they didn't lose to a single mid-major team. And this team's better. This team's got better pitching so far, and this team has more proven hitters in the lineup. Whatever that may be on a given night, right? And so, there's no excuse. I feel like, and this is a crazy opinion, I feel like they need to give this team a chance one way or another. And the decision either has to be made by Paul Maneri or it needs to be made by South Carolina. Probably neither one of those things is going to happen. And I won't sit here and talk about it on coffee the entire time. But last night was enough. Three strikes, you're out in baseball. That's three embarrassing losses for this program. May drop a game to a mid-major in the midweek. Sometimes during conference play, that would happen because you're setting up your pitching and stuff. In the preseason, it is freaking rare. Very rare. It happens sometimes. I think Kingston lost game three to maybe Penn or somebody a few years ago. I mean, it happens sometimes. It's baseball, right? But I can't remember it ever happening three times before the freaking Clemson series, with the way the Clemson series is set up now. Three times. If you rally and you take some against the Tigers and don't screw up too many more times. And I'll be honest, other SEC schools lost last night too. It was a bloodbath in the midweek, man. Arkansas beat Arkansas State. It was ugly for some of these teams, which could be a broader issue. I don't think that's the issue at South. I think the broader issue is obviously touch South Carolina. And I'm talking about kind of like focus and maybe a little NIL and stuff like that. But we've seen this with two separate sets of players, the same approach, and the stats bear it out. Walks are down, hit by pitches are way down, on base percentage is way down, swing away, you know. And so that's that. I mean, that's all I can say. I mean, enough's enough. You know, you do it three times, three strikes, you're out. You know, you lost to Northern Kentucky, you lost to Army in a non-competitive type of game, and then last night you let Queens of all teams, probably the worst team you'll play. A program that like that school is merging with Elon University, and they say they're going to keep the athletic department separate, right? But it says for now. So that may not even exist. It's like Limestone, which is a little sadder, you know, because Limestone just went away. But they're merging with Elon. So that may they might even, you know, 9-44, 0-17 against power conference opponents. 9-44 last year, 0-17 against power. I mean, come on. That is it, as far as that goes. I mean, I just. You know, change or South Carolina needs to make the change. And it's not fair to these players. It's not fair to people that gave NIL money that are funding the roster this year, which was pretty well funded, at least top four in the Southeastern Conference, maybe higher. It is not fair to the fans that have suffered through this season. Gamecock fans, baseball matters a lot at this school. And there's data to back it up. And I'm not even talking about like, you know, some of the stuff from last season, you know, with all that stuff. I'm just talking about the baseball part of it. It's a waste. And, you know, I just think they owe it whoever's the decider with all this. And it's, you know, Paul Menieri's the decider. He can decide to change and mix it up and enjoy the supposed benefits of it. Or somebody needs to decide that for him. And that's it's sad to say, but man, we've seen it. It's proven. And it's just I mean, I suppose if you keep swinging away, eventually maybe you'll have some games where some good things happen. That happened some last year. Like down at A&M, you know, and then they blew the lead because of pitching. But I just don't, I don't know, man. That was rock bottom. Anyway, Gamecock softball won last night 5-4. Tonight, the women's basketball team goes for the outright SEC championship on senior night, 8 o'clock at the Colonial Life Arena against Missouri. So, football. The Gamecocks start spring practice in less than a week. Shane Beamer at a press conference earlier. He'll have another one Tuesday to get everybody ready for Wednesday's spring practice. So I thought about this yesterday after the defensive objectives. You know, I went through all of that and started talking about good to great. And so I was like, well, you know, who needs to take it from good to great this year? And there's a difference between already being a great player, and great is broadly defined. You know, we're not going to get into like, you know, I think you can use the word, you know, it's not like generational where that seems to be like great plus. And people have forgotten what a generation is. I mean, you may have to like redefine that as, you know, if you say generational, it's not like once in a generation. It's more like part of an all generation team, you know, because I'm trying to wrap my head around the word generational and how people use it. But if you want to say like all generation team, I can buy the usage of that. But it's generations a long time though. Gen X born, that's a period of 15, 16 years. So, and then if you talk anyway, I don't want to get into all that. But great is like a great player, you know, that kind of thing. It's kind of an aside, or merely good. I mean, that's the thing. And I think there's a lot of good players. You know, for like the Dylan Stewart, you know, because he was. I think we know Dylan Stewart's a great player already. I think we know Lenore Sellers can be a great player, but with the quarterbacks, he's obviously the number one thing because he was good, average at times, below average at times last year. So you, and this is another part of this is not, it's based, you have to base it on potential, but it's not about potential and projection and how fast they can run and how big they are and stuff like that. It's just about going out and balling in games, period, which is what you all want to see and what I want to see. Everybody wants to see that. That's, there's not very many games. So you want to maximize that. So who can be a great player on the field against everyone from Kent State to Clemson and hopefully beyond that next year? Who has that type of floor to get to that type of ceiling? And I mentioned Sellers. I'll get to the do the quarterbacks last. I'll start with I'm not going to start with a specialist. I'm going to start with corner. And I just decided to name one. There are others you could make an argument for, but you feel free in the comments if you're on YouTube to or shoot us a tweet at Gamecock Show at JC Sherbert and tell us which ones you would think if there's others. Don't mind that. It's this is not the Ten Commandments. This is an opinion based on information, analysis, all that good stuff. But at corner, so I think Vakari Swain is a great player. And I think he became a great corner at the end of last year. So obviously there's a next level for him, but I went with Judge Collier because heading into, I thought he had a really solid, really good, wouldn't call it great, but really good 2024. I think there were a lot of expectations for him this year. And then he kind of got caught up and was turned around on the turf at Mercedes-Benz, and he's out for most of the season and wasn't really the same when he came back. Got that, and that wasn't a terrible knee injury, but it was one that, you're like, wow, you gotta kind of get back. And so when Judge was at his best in 2024, he's a big physical guy, as far as press coverage goes. There were times in 2024 where he was really good at blowing up screens and things like that. Last year we didn't see as much of it. I don't know how many times teams really went after that, but the coverage part of it down the field, sometimes he'll get beat, sometimes he won't. But that's part of playing corner. But Judge Collier is a great athlete. Rock Hill defensive backs, you never bet against them. Really needs a rebound year and take what good he's done so far to great. Because if you can have him play great and be a great player, then you got Swain on the other side. And if they stay healthy, I think that could be another great pair of, as Carolina's had through the years, great corners out there. Safety, I'm going to go with my guy, Kendall Daniels Jr., just because, and I've said before, and my man Craig agrees with me, chat boxer, that, hey, if Jazavian Currents is a true freshman, is good enough to step in and start, and Kendall Daniels Jr. is your other one, that's a 6'4", 210, 6'4", 218-pound, two safeties that are big, athletic dudes. Those are dudes, and but this is not about that potential. I thought Kendall Daniels Jr. on special teams and in the times he played was good. And it's quite a leap. I know it's quite a leap to say, take it to great in year two. But who needs to do that if the Gamecocks want to have a massive turnaround and all that? And I'm talking really good year, right? So maybe he can be merely good. But and I'm not gonna hype him like I did Fred Johnson because we found out sometimes those first year guys, even as talented as they are, inconsistent. Safety's kind of like, linebacker in terms of the mental part of the game. Although I've seen safeties come in. I mean, DQ Smith and Nicky Minwore, 2022 as true freshmen, they were great out there. At four true freshmen, they were great. Nick, of course, became great, and DQ had a really solid career as well. But so we've seen young players, is what I'm saying, get out there. I like Kendall an awful lot. So that would be a big one. On defensive tackle, there's a lot of different options. I thought about Kelby Collins because he's close. I thought about, Jordan Thomas because they're really excited about him. Tamia Adurajaye is a player that I think is already very good. But I went with the maybe the obvious, Gabriel Brownlow, Denny. Oh, Troy Pikes too. I mean, Troy Pikes gonna come on and be good. But who could they really use to be great? Gabriel Brownlow Dindy. He flashed at times last year. He's got to stay healthy. He's got to remain aggressive and locked in every single play. You want to talk about a guy with some, natural leadership quality? He's not necessarily a rah-rah warrior type guy because, the whole thing about him is Carolina last year got his motor going more so than maybe it was at A&M. And that's sometimes that's a big key for big guys on defense because they've got such great athletic ability and things come easy for them. But they needed him to lock in, and he did. He did. There were some games where he had to play 10 plays because he, was banged up or whatever. But he'd get out there and make things happen. He's got a high character to him, wants to be a minister. The folks that get into the ministry sometimes have natural leadership qualities. I think, but the key is he's got to take his play to that great level because it kind of falls on deaf ears. I mean, like Nick Barrett was the leader last year, and Nick Barrett went out there and backed it up with a fantastic senior season relative to where he was. And he had moments of greatness, right? And so you got to have that. And if they can get him to that point, and this is year two, remember Mykel Goodwin made a big jump. Remember, Travion Robertson's back to coach him full time. Jordan Dove did a fantastic job with this guy. It's just if I have to pick one in the room, although there's many options, D tackle's gonna collectively be like this. I would go with Gabe Brownlow Dindy at edge. This was pretty easy for me. It was Caleb Herring. And Caleb Herring's been quite good at Tennessee at times, but they need him to be great. Whoever's playing over there needs to be great. So Caleb Herring, a transfer portal pickup from Tennessee, very good natural pass rusher. But they need him to be great and not just kind of how he was at Tennessee, which was good, good. And he's got that floor, like kind of like he and Kelby Collins are kind of the same. They're a little different than maybe a Goodwin and Brownlow Dindy, who just have not played, or Jordan Thomas, who has not played. They've played quite a bit. It was kind of in reserve roles, may have started some here and there, I think, but Gamecocks need Caleb Herring to be great. Linebacker, you guys know who I'm going with. You could say Justin, and you see any of the top three, but Fred Johnson. We need the Fred Johnson. We need to see the Fred Johnson that we saw against Virginia Tech every game. If he can do that, he's on his way to some special things. He's draft eligible after this year. It's his third year, so he could play his way into a big payday given his size and athleticism and all. I mean, he's as NFL a linebacker type as there is. So Fred Johnson's the obvious choice there. Switching to offense, offensive line, there's a lot, seriously, a lot of options, obviously. But I'm going with Josiah Thompson, assuming he's healthy for spring in the season. Again, I hope he's not on the Beamer's injury list he gives out on Tuesday. There's a chance he is. But if he's healthy, gets back in there, works at left tackle, cross train him on right. If they get peak, even if they don't, whether they get peak back or not, Josiah Thompson taking it from. Because he was good as a freshman. He was up and down, more down than up as a sophomore last year, struggled like the rest of them. They can get him, Randy Clements, Kendall Brown, they can get him, Jason Smith, who the assistant offensive line coach, who I hear really good things about. They can get him to great. That's going to be very helpful because you're talking about a 6'7", 305-pound jumbo athlete type out there. That can be a dude, right? I mean, I've talked to some people that scouted Carolina in 2024, and they thought he was, they thought that when he went down against Vanderbilt, that it would be a little bit more of an issue than it was. Tree played really well against Vandy and then against Missouri because they thought this guy had more talent than raw talent than anybody. So Josiah Thompson, tight end. Hayden Hurst, my God. Oh, JC, it's early. Brady Hunt. I had Hunt written down on my thing, Hunt, and it looked like Hurst, and I just said it. I apologize, folks. It's not scripted here on Coffee, but it's my chicken scratch when I make notes. So I apologize for that. After yesterday, when I misidentified 16 different people on the and couldn't talk on the show, which is quite an encore. Brady Hunt. Now, do I think that there's the season rest on somebody at tight end being great? No, I mean, they can be good and get by with it. It's the system. They adapt to it. If he is, he's going to get the ball. But if you think about Brady Hunt, and there's times in all phases of the game, he's proven to be more physical than he seems on a consistent basis. He's had more, better hands than he's shown on a consistent basis. He's was faster last year. This is a guy they were very high on out of the portal that A&M wanted and other schools. He almost went to A&M. But, this guy, it could be, if he puts it all together and takes it from good to great, the guy can be a weapon. Pat DeMarco talked about it when they hired Kendall Briles on the morning show. They like him. And so it's just a matter of consistency. The blocking has to be better. But if there's a guy in the room right now, you kind of point to and go, if he can put it all together, he can be great. It's Brady Hunt. Wide receiver is pretty easy. Nick Harbor. There's other options. Obviously you could make a case for Jahdan Gibson, any of the rising sophomore, second year guys. You can make a case for Nitro Tuggle. Nitro Tuggle was actually my second choice here, but Nick Harbor's been pretty good, and he gets better and better and better. But I think that this final year, if he can take it to great, it's going to be very beneficial because once he becomes a great football player, he's already a great athlete. He's going to be very hard to stop. Very hard to cover, very hard to catch, very hard to tackle. Running back, this was a tough choice because, like I said, there's going to be a war in that room. But I'm just going to go with my guy, Juwan Howell, because I think he's got greatness in him. And I think he's been pretty good toward the end of last year. But just when I watch them all, I like him the best. Maybe I'm wrong. I tried to think back when I was ranking, and I've been wrong. Running backs. Yeah, I did some good things. Joe Mixon was a good call by yours truly. I just kind of was, we didn't have anybody in California in the early days of 24/7. So I was tasked, and my friend Jerry Hamilton was, we were like, we're going to go watch all these California kids. And Joe Mixon, I think, had an offer from San Jose State. And we were like, wow, this guy's really good. So we put him in the top 100, and then he had 45 offers. Now, I think that may have caused some coaches to watch his film. I don't think that they said, oh, JC and Jerry ranked him high. We need to offer him. They don't do that. But then I've had some stinkers. There's a guy named Enrique Davis. I ranked as the number one back in the country out of Florida. He went to Auburn, never did anything. So, I don't know that I trust myself as well with running back as maybe D-end or some other spots, but I just like what Juwan Howell does naturally. And I think at 225 pounds with speed and elusiveness and patience and all this natural ability, if you can put it all together, that can be your RB1. I'm not predicting that, but anytime there's a guy with a lot of with the raw potential that can take it as a football player, because there's a difference, a lot of P words, player, prospect, potential. Potential facilitates your value as a prospect. What kind of player you are to just is about another P word, performance. So the four P's there. Potential equals prospect. Performance equals player. And we're talking about players. Talking about players. Great players. That's what I say. Can he be a great player? Yes, I think so. And that would be very beneficial to South Carolina. And then, of course, at quarterback, Lenore Sellers. Lenore Sellers has obviously shown flashes of greatness. What needs to happen this year, after a year last year where Lenore's was good at times, I went through it, below average at times. He needs to be great for this team to go, and that's captain obvious. That's more obvious than the blue chip ratio. It's the Lenore Sellers needs to be a great player for South Carolina to really reach their full potential. And we've talked about some of the things that need to happen there. You know, just having the offense, Kendall Brown's offense, second nature. It's not that hard to learn. Mastering the RPO game. Cause I just don't, you know, whenever they've done that with Sellers, I don't know that it's always been that he's always made the right decisions on the field, you know, and that's a little more. To me, that's a little more critical than, you know, oh, he missed the third read of this play. There was a receiver wide open. That happens to quarterbacks quite a bit when they're in kind of a more of a complex offense. I don't think there's going to be a bunch of one, two, three reads in this system that are complicated and slow developing. But the RPO part of it, you watch Indiana last year. That was a lot. I mean, they didn't run some fantastical offense. It was mostly RPOs. You read up on Shanahan, their offensive coordinator. That's what he does. Consistently puts the defense in conflict, and Fernando Mendoza ran it as well as anybody I've ever seen. You know, Pavia, I don't want to dive into Pavia on that because I don't know if the kill zones offense is quite like that. But you get Lenora Sellers making the right reads on RPOs. That means you're almost a triple option type of attack with regards to he can give it, he can pull it and run it, or he can pass it on any given play. And to me, if I'm a defender, that is mind-blowingly scary because last year with what Shula was doing, and there's different types of RPOs. Some RPOs are just run it or, you know, hand it off or pass it. NFL style RPOs. And Carolina ran some of those last year. And I think they had success when they did. But you're like, okay, what are they gonna do? And Lenore's has to make the right read, you know. That's just the bottom line. With it, I think he's going to be set up for it. But if there's one kind of mental part of the game that I'm hoping for him to progress with, it's mastering whatever the base of what Briles wants to do on offense. And he was 80% RPO at TCU, so I'm sure there's going to be a lot of that at Carolina. And it fits Carolina's personnel. Fast moving, all that, you know. So that's the big key there, I think, for me. I'm going to be paying attention to, and obviously, Lenore Sellers going from good to great over the course of 1 year, and we've seen it. He's got it in him. It is going to be massive for this football team. All right, spring practice next week. Thanks for listening to my very pointed comments about Gamecock baseball. Again, tonight, ladies are going for the outright SEC championship senior night. Should be emotional. Missouri's in town. They used to be good. I think Sophie Cunningham was there. They're not anymore. Always good to beat them. So check that out. And then Clemson series. Baseball starts Friday night at Founders. I mean, I'm just going to say right now, they're going to sweep Carolina if they don't change something other than the lineup every day. But I suppose you could have a Amp Phillips or somebody could go shut them down, and you can win 2-0 in some scenarios. It's baseball, so you don't rule anything out. But anyway, I don't want to get back on that. JB will talk about it on the morning show. Matt Anderson, the late night Gamecock, is in with him today. He won't be with us tomorrow on the show as normal. We're gonna have a free for all Friday. Open the chat box up. Just a continuation of Wide Open Wednesday with Phil and I tomorrow. But Matt Anderson's in with JB. Will Crow, a former Gamecock pitcher. Gamecock's obviously not the best start last night on the mound, but he's going to break down the pitching and all that good stuff. And then Alex Jones from thebigspur.com going to pepper him with some recruiting questions, expose him to some Gen X culture, as we always do for Gamecock Smorgasbord. Second hour of the show, Mad Dog and I'll be in during the crosstalk and afternoon. For that. Don't forget inside thegamecocks.com, go to that website, sign up for our newsletter, get an update on our forthcoming website, online community and media outlet. That's what I'm calling it. Can't wait to get started with that. Again, the newsletter is about 5% of what you can expect to see from the site. It's just a little appetizer. We wanted to kind of get out there, get back in the swing of producing written content. InsideTheGamecocks.com will be part of the Chief Sports Network, regardless if any other potential forms that it's in terms of network partnerships and all that, those are being worked out. Maybe into the spring before we get it done, but we're confident we're gonna confident you guys are gonna be happy with it. So check all that out. And I appreciate you guys listening today. This has been Coffee with JC Sherbert. I'm out. Holla.